Welcome to Local Talk at KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, with
Susan Franzen. This is the choir of the Ames Jewish Congregation. Friday, the 14th of December, was the seventh of the 8 days of Hanukkah.
Members of the Ames Jewish Congregation graciously welcomed KHOI reporters to take part in the festivities of their Hanukkah party at the synagogue on Friday. And to further explain, members of the Jewish community spoke with us at length about the holiday, which we discovered has special meaning in our area.
It turns out that our Jewish congregation was created exactly 50 years ago, and it actually all started with a Hanukkah party. But we get ahead of ourselves. What exactly is Hanukkah? John Pleasance, cantor for the congregation, and Sally Lepin, teacher and former director of the religious school, agreed to come into KHOI Radio to explain.
Most of us don't know the story behind Hanukkah. Could you give us a little background?
In 167 BCE, we call it BCE rather than BC, which means before the Common Era. At that time, the Jews that were in what we call Israel now were under the rule of Syrians after Alexander, King Alexander, sort of conquered that whole region. And so the whole region was sort of what we call Hellenized or sort of Greek-like. What Alexander did was, once he'd conquered everything, he said, okay, well, you Syrians are under my control, but I'm going to let you rule this area. So the Syrians had control over this area. So they brought in a lot of Hellenistic practices, started taking things out of the synagogue and replacing them with other kinds of statues and things like that. And part of what was happening was imposed on the Jewish people, but part of it was something the Jewish people at that time started getting into themselves. So they were starting to become Hellenized and forgetting their original practices and things like that. Basically, the Jews were becoming more secular, but the secular had to do with the Greek culture.
However, there were a number of Jews who continued to practice the Jewish religion and were opposed to Jews who were following Greek ways. And eventually, a priest named Mattathias rose up when he was being forced to practice the Greek religion. He, together with his sons, rebelled. And over a period of 3 years, this guerrilla war prevailed. Antiochus had ordered his army to defile the temple in Jerusalem. And when eventually Mattathias' sons were victorious in their guerrilla war, they immediately wanted to get rid of the statue of Zeus, get rid of anything that defiled the holiness of the temple. And when the temple was cleansed, they wanted to rededicate it to the Jewish God. Hanukkah grew out of that. Hanukkah means rededication.
Sometime later, another story gets attached to this, which is what we mostly think about when we think about Hanukkah, and that has to do with the lights. And this has been tied into the historical story, and there's one of the things that's in the synagogue is something called the Ner Tamid, which is the eternal light. And so it's always burning there. Well, they didn't have enough oil for this light to keep burning and burning, and so All they had was oil for one day.
When the Jews got into the temple, they wanted to rekindle the great menorah, but they could only find one small cruse of oil, and it was not enough oil for the oil to burn for 8 days and nights. But they took a chance and went ahead and used the oil to kindle the lights on the menorah, and miraculously, the oil lasted. Hence the celebration. Legend of the oil does not appear in any Jewish literature until several hundred years after the events. And some people think that this legend was developed to take the emphasis away from the guerrilla warfare, because at the time that the legend came into being, Jews were under control. They were a subjugated group, but they wanted to continue practicing their religion. And by taking the emphasis away from the guerrilla warfare, the rebellion, and the success of it, and emphasizing the rededication of the temple and the miracle of the lights, they felt that they would be in a better position to continue practicing their religion under foreign domination.
And the menorah has significance now because it was symbolically part of the original temple, the spiritual home of Judaism, which was destroyed.
Yes.
Can you explain what the menorah is?
The best word I can think of is to describe it as a candelabra. However, candles did not exist in ancient times, so it was oil that was used to produce light. It was a fairly substantial object. I envision it as being at least 3 feet tall, maybe taller than that. And the reason I say that is because when the Romans conquered Jerusalem in the year 70 CE, they took that menorah back to Rome. And we have a frieze from that time period that shows this huge menorah being dragged by the Roman soldiers.
Bim bum, bim bum, bim bum, bim bum, bim bum, bim bum.
Our Hanukkah is a special type of menorah that's only used at Hanukkah. And our Hanukkah actually has 8 branches in addition to one helper, because we have 8 nights of Hanukkah. So there is one holder for each candle for each night of Hanukkah. There needs to be a separate candle for lighting those, the sort of the worker candle, or the shamash is what we call it. Yes.
The first night, you would light your shamash candle, and you'd light one candle. And then the next night, you would light your shamash candle and 2 candles, and so on, till you get through all 8. The miracle of Hanukkah is that this oil that should have lasted only for one day actually lasted for 8 days. There's a blessing associated with the lighting of the candles. We light candles every night of Hanukkah, and we fry things like latkes and donuts on Hanukkah to commemorate the oil that was associated with it.
And latkes are?
Latkes are potato pancakes. Originally, there would be some small gifts for kids that would be given out at this time, and there's a little game involving something called a dreidel, which is like a top that kids would play. Certainly now, Hanukkah, again, in competition with Christmas, has been ramped up. The gift-giving part has now been ramped up to make them feel a little bit better about the whole season. So Hanukkah has clearly taken on a level of importance far beyond what it was originally. And again, there are some parallels with Christmas in that the 25th of Kislev is when Hanukkah starts, and it's the 25th of December when Christmas is. So there's some borrowing that took place there.
Did the events actually happen then, or is this also aligning with the solstice?
I mean, we do know the historical events, the Maccabees beating back the Syrians, that did happen.
At that time?
At that time. There are some other Josephus and so on. There's some other historical references to that. So we know that that did happen.
Our synagogue has a Hanukkah party every year, and on one of the nights of Hanukkah, this year it happens to be Friday night. It'll be the seventh night. Each family brings its own menorah and candles, and we put them on the tables. And since you have two or three families at a table, you'll have two or three Hanukkiot to light. And we all say the blessings together and light our candles. The choir at Ames Jewish Congregation usually leads the people at the dinner in Hanukkah songs. And then typically men in the congregation make the latkes earlier in the day, and then they're kept warm in the oven, and we have latkes. The way we've done it in recent years is we do it as a potluck. So we have the latkes and salad and dessert, but everyone brings a main course to go with the latkes.
Why do the men make the latkes for this particular meal?
This is our tradition. We like time off.
Who started this, the women or the men?
I'll let you guess on that. But it's been going on a while.
What do you do when you make the latkes?
We use food processors and grind up the potatoes and the onions and the flour and all the ingredients.
What's your part?
I just cook them, put them in a bath of hot oil and fry them until they're brown.
You enjoy doing it?
Oh, yeah.
It's not that different from like hash brown potatoes. It's shredded potato and onion, and there's a little either flour, or we actually use matzah meal, which is like crushed up matzahs, and a couple of eggs, salt and pepper, and then you fry them.
So how many men does it take to
screw with a light bulb?
We made a lot of latkes.
I mean, we started at 3 o'clock. We cooked for 3 hours. So we had two guys just manning all of the frying pans. We had about five different frying pans going. This is a teeny little kitchen here. We are not equipped for this. And then a couple people, scrubbing potatoes and then, processing it all. We had a couple food processors. It goes on and on, and then you gotta move fast because the potatoes turn brown. Onion grated in with the potatoes, the acid in the onion keeps it from turning brown.
So, again, what was your job?
What was I doing? I was helping to grate the potatoes.
You were grating the potatoes?
I was a potato grater, yeah.
You
I was not a fryer.
Job.
It's all right.
Grating potatoes.
And then clean it up constantly, We were just making a mess as we go. One thing about this particular congregation, we're a very small group, and we're very much a do-it-yourself congregation. We don't have a professional catering staff or anything like that. We do all our own cooking, cleaning up, and setting tables. When we need these tables out, we pull them out of the closet, we rearrange all the chairs, we teach our own Sunday school classes. It's really different. I grew up in New York City in a really big
synagogue, you know, and it was all professionals. It was a professional catering staff, a huge professional kitchen, and, you know, you never got to know the clerical staff at all. The clergy. Don't call them clerical staff, do you? the rabbi and the cantor and all those people, they were, you know, they were not really accessible. So it's really a different experience being in a small community in the Midwest. It's really very nice. It gets tiresome sometimes, sure, but, you know, it's ours. It's really ours. We really built it. And we keep it going. It's tough. You know, it's not a lot of Jews in Central Iowa. It's a struggle just to keep it going.
A couple things. First of all, you can now have dessert, but don't rush over just yet. We need to thank some people who made all this possible. Leslie and Barbara and Denise, will you raise your hands there? And a number of people frying latkes. You can probably tell who they are by how they smell, but if we could have them raise their hands. There's Cliff, Kevin, Paul, Bill. Where's Bill? What happened to Bill? And me. And Irv. Yeah, Irv. Celebrating Hanukkah.
How did you feel when you were lighting the candles?
I felt great, like I was actually lighting a candle. I felt like I was alive.
Alive? What are you doing right now?
I'm eating my cake.
I'm eating my donut.
Do you like Hanukkah?
I love it.
It's my favorite holiday.
Why is it your favorite holiday?
Because I get presents.
My favorite holiday because we get presents and we get to light the candle.
How old are you girls?
6, 7.
We actually have a lot of latkes left over. It's a miracle.
This is Susan Franzen, reporter for Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are speaking today with members of the Ames Jewish Congregation, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Sally Lepan, John Pleasance, and David and Hannah Gradwall share their recollections.
Hanukkah has a special place in your congregation's history, isn't that true?
Yes, because back in 1961, one of the Jewish families in Ames invited other Jewish families over to their home for a Hanukkah party. And it was during that Hanukkah party that somebody said, you know, we really should have our own congregation. Then we wouldn't need to go down to Des Moines all the time because it was a long trip back then before the interstate. And sure enough, within a few months, the idea took hold and they started a congregation.
I was interested in finding out about what it was like in the congregation's first year, so I asked Hannah and David Gradwall about that.
I'm David Gradwall. Came to Ames in 1962 because there was a job available. When I came back from my interview trip to Boston and Hannah and I were talking over possibilities, we decided we really thought the job in Ames looked good and that we would like living in Iowa. But I said, I don't think there's anything Jewish in Ames, so if we're going to belong to a temple, I think we'll have to commute to Des Moines.
It was very interesting. At the time we moved to Ames, we were welcomed by the welcome wagon lady, who was part, I think, of the Chamber of Commerce. And she asked me if we had found a church home yet. And I told her that we were Jewish and probably would have to go to Des Moines for services. And she said, oh, no, there is a small group that's meeting in the lounge of the First Baptist Church, which happened to be just a few blocks from where we were renting an apartment.
We walked to the First Baptist Church to go to Jewish services, and it was an interesting experience. There was a small group of people sitting around on overstuffed chairs and a sofa, and over the fireplace there was a painting of Jesus looking down upon us. There were not enough prayer books of the same edition, so we were working from different prayer books. There was no rabbi, but we kind of knew the order of services, so we progressed. This was definitely a do-it-yourself congregation, and it rather appealed to us in the sense that there was a group that was interested in having services. We had to figure it out for ourselves, and that appealed to us, so we joined the group. In the early 70s, I think it was, we moved from having our services in the lounge of the First Baptist Church to rented quarters on Main Street on the second floor of what had been a bowling alley and is now Luckland's Restaurant. We used to refer to it as The Rooms. So the congregation met there, and then in 1978, the Episcopal Parish of Ames, through Father Ron Whitmer, invited the Ames Jewish congregation to purchase land adjacent to their St. David's Episcopal Church out on Calhoun Avenue. So the Ames Jewish congregation did build their temple structure there, and it was the two congregations decided it would be nice to share something in addition to the parking lot. So the two congregations set up an exchange of pulpits once a year and adult discussion groups from the two congregations, and later an interfaith dialogue lecture series that brought in people once a year, not only Jews and Christians, but we had, I think, at least one Muslim and one Buddhist and one atheist speaker. And that continues pretty much till the present time.
Now there is a synagogue, the Ames Jewish Congregation Synagogue. And we are technically a Reform congregation, so we talked about this spectrum of things, although we're the only synagogue in town, and so there are people in our congregation who have more Orthodox backgrounds and more conservative backgrounds, and so we try to have the congregation be sufficiently broad that it can welcome those sorts of people and they feel they can do their practices and be comfortable doing them.
What is a cantor?
Well, a cantor is a person who does a variety of things. They're mainly associated with leading the music during services and doing all the music-related things. Technically, I'm actually a cantorial soloist. A, quote, real cantor is a person who's had really almost as much training as a rabbi.
And how did you become a cantor?
Well, when we first got here, we went to the local synagogue. There's only one synagogue in town. They had a guy there who was doing the musical kinds of things, and he played a guitar and sang songs, and he was very good, and it was a very enjoyable experience being in the service with him. And we realized at some point he was an ISU student, and he was going to graduate. We didn't have anybody waiting in the wings to take over all the musical sorts of things. And so I said, well, you know, I play guitar and I sing some, you know, maybe I could do some of these things. So I started out very small. We had a couple of rabbis who were very musical, and one of them I just invited him to my house for a whole afternoon with a tape recorder, and I just had him sing everything he could possibly think of. And then there are a lot of resources that were available then and even more available now. So there's CDs and online resources. So basically over the years I've accrued a large bunch of knowledge of what to do and how to do it.
So you're self-taught.
Right. There's a recognition that not every synagogue is going to be able to have a cantor of that sort. What people have also realized is that there, however, are people within the congregation who have the ability to be song leaders. The idea is to allow these people to be as good as they can be.
How is it being a cantor in Ames?
I really enjoy it. I find it very rewarding. In real life, I'm a biology professor at Iowa State, so I'm a teacher in that. So the two kind of dovetail to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Rock of ages, let our song raise your saving power. You amidst the raging foes were our sheltering tower, sheltering tower,
sheltering tower, sheltering tower.
Ooh. Rock of ages, let our song praise your saving power. You amidst raging foes were our sheltering tower. You're my sheltering tower.
Sheltering tower.
Songs where you may be scattered, your message lifts me. Now the time is nearing, which will see all men free, tyrants disappearing, which will see.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio,
where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Ursula Rudenberg with
Susan Franzen. Today we are sharing a celebration of Hanukkah and the story of the Ames Jewish Congregation, which is in its 50th anniversary year.
What is the essence of practicing Judaism? Mr. John Pleasance.
In some sense, survival is kind of the essence of it. I mean, if we think about what religions were out there at one point that aren't there now, I mean, Jews have a long survival history, and that in and of itself is something to celebrate. I mean, there's this general thing about, well, what's the meaning of Jewish holidays? Well, it's they tried to conquer us, we beat them back, now let's eat. So.
Well, in Christianity, the essence really of Christianity is to have a relationship to the figure of Christ. What would you say would be the essence to practice Judaism?
The word Israel comes from wrestling with God. And so to a certain extent, the mission is to wrestle with God or wrestle with the God concept and try to incorporate that into your life in some way. And the rituals are sort of ways to kind of remind you this is what you are and this is what you're doing. For Reformed Jews, we don't consider the answers to everything given to us. And we have to go out there and we have to wrestle with the concepts and we have to somehow make them our own in some way.
When you say wrestling with the concept of God, embedded in that is that historical movement towards the idea of monotheism. Is that correct?
Right. That was a singular thing that the Jews did that was different from the peoples around them at the time. If you go back and read the Bible, the Jews oftentimes had to wrestle with this concept of just one God. So at various points in the Bible, a golden calf, other kinds of situations, they start looking at other gods or idols of some sort and then they have to be brought back to, no, there's just the one God.
What does it mean to you personally?
Well, I like the concept of wrestling with things. I'm a scientist, I'm a teacher, I'm an educator, and so as a teacher, I'm putting things out there as sort of revealed truth, revealed to me. But on the other hand, I know that the science that I do today, the, quote, truths that I have today are different than what I taught 30 years ago. So things change, and you have to wrestle with the material to sort of find the essence of it. So it's something that fits me very naturally, always striving, you know, looking for things, trying to figure things out.
Los postelicos vocumen
This is Ursula Rudenberg on KHOI Radio for Local Talk, here with
Greta Anderson,
with Sally LePan from the Ames Jewish Congregation.
In your time teaching and being the director of the religious school, what did you like teaching the children?
Well, what I really loved to do was to get the whole school together for special programs, because our school was always very, very small. When I started being director, we had, 21 or 22 children in the whole school. This was from age 4 through age 15. Eventually, we grew to have about, 51 or 52 students. But again, it was from ages 4 to 15. So compared to some of the churches in Ames, this is a very small group. And so I wanted to help the children feel a sense of Jewish community more than they would get from just having three or four children in their class. So what I particularly enjoyed was heritage programs.
Do you know where your roots go back to?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My father came here to this country when he was 10 years old. He escaped from Russia, and he told me the story of his escape from Russia. His father had come 2 years earlier and had settled in Philadelphia and had worked and saved up enough money to send ship fare for my grandmother, my father, and his younger brother, as well as a Russian neighbor. They were from a shtetl, a small village in Ukraine, not far from the city of Kiev. My grandfather left in 1905. He was in the Tsarist army at the time. And then he sent for his wife and children 2 years later. So my father came over in 1907. My father, as a 10-year-old, was charged with the responsibility of carrying the family samovar. The samovar holds water. It's used for heating water, and the Russians and the Jews were very fond of tea. So they would heat the water in this samovar and keep a small pot of very strong tea sitting on top of the chute that had the coal in it or the briquettes in it. And then they would have tea throughout the day. The samovar was a prized wedding gift, very special to the family. So my father, as a 10-year-old, had to carry that across the border, sneak across at night. And he was very fond of telling that story, and he would show me how the samovar came apart, and they put it inside a goose down pillow to keep protect it.
So you saw it?
I have it. I'm an only child, and my father was the oldest son.
Tafilati Vesham Tota Nizabea.
What I particularly enjoyed was heritage programs. And as I was describing my story of my father coming to this country, I loved to go back to that Eastern European leaving Russia, leaving Poland, coming to America, because I was most familiar with that from my childhood, and because most of the children in a religious school did have Eastern European roots. And several times over the course of the 16 years that I ran the school, we had heritage programs. Each program would build on the previous one. We would have two older members of the congregation come in and do a little play, would pretend to be a husband and wife in a shtetl who were trying to decide whether to leave or stay. Here is the husband. This is his place in the community. He was very involved in his shul, his synagogue. And here was the woman, the homemaker, worried about the safety of them and particularly the safety of her children. The Cossacks had just come through the town, and they had hidden, and it went on from there. The children were mesmerized by this argument between these two old people in the old country. And I got most of the parents involved. We had people selling the ship tickets. When they got to Ellis Island, we had a pediatrician. Then they had to choose a new name in the new country. The program took place over anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. And at the end of the time, it would culminate in a heritage fair where each of the classes prepared some kind of research or some kind of project. That it was a chance for them to explore, to ask their parents, and if their parents didn't know, to ask their grandparents. So it was also promoting intergenerational communication within their families. And then we would have a lunch that featured traditional foods. I really wanted them to feel a sense of community. So in part, it helped them develop a sense of community within the congregation, but also through time. I feel a connection with the Jewish people through time, and also as we celebrate each holiday, particularly Passover, I think about Jews throughout the world doing the same things I'm doing. So it's very much feeling part of a people.
What is the vision for the future?
That's a very interesting question. Because, as I explained at the beginning with the history of Hanukkah, where some of the Jews were very fascinated with Greek culture and adopted, assimilated into Greek society, others maintained their Judaism. And in a sense, there was a civil war going on between the Jews who were Hellenized versus the Jews who were traditional Jews. We have the same kind of thing going on now, but we're not under any domination. It's just that within this country where we're living in a non-Jewish culture and our families are intermarrying, we sometimes wonder what Judaism will look like 25, 50 years from now. How many children will have been assimilated to the point where they no longer carry on Jewish traditions?
Do you feel that the presence of the synagogue makes a difference?
I would like to think it does, because it offers Jews who want to continue practicing Judaism a place to do that and a home for their children.
Oh,
Are there a lot of synagogues in Iowa?
Not as many as there used to be. Marshalltown used to have a synagogue. They don't have one anymore. Sioux City consolidated their synagogues into one building. Mason City, they have a synagogue there, but the congregation has shrunk very, very small. There used to be a synagogue in Fort Dodge, and there isn't one anymore. That's a typical pattern, not just in Iowa, but around the country. But there's certainly synagogues in Des Moines. There's a conservative synagogue, there's an Orthodox and a Reform synagogue in Des Moines, a Jewish federation that includes the synagogues in Des Moines and us. We meet and do things collectively on occasion.
And you have a rabbi?
We're not sufficiently large and don't have a sufficient resource base to have a full-time rabbi, so we've historically had a rabbi who comes in from elsewhere once a month and does Shabbat services once a month. Right now, our rabbis, Rabbi David Wirtschafter, who lives in the Twin Cities and comes down from there. On the other Shabbats, when the rabbi isn't there, we have lay-led services. We have the Ner Tamid, this eternal light that's always burning there. The Torah scrolls are there.
It's a sacred building.
It's a sacred building, exactly. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Ames area, there are a number of people in the Ames area that would identify themselves as Jews. Some of them have never set foot in the synagogue and probably never will. But they're all part of the Jewish community in Ames, and so the Ames Jewish congregation can serve as sort of a focal point for that. And I think, well, one of the things that's important about a church group or synagogue group or anything is a sense of community that gets fostered. That's really the key thing. And I think any minority religion, no matter what it is, it's more difficult to keep the community together from, you know, with the onslaught of Christmas music and whatever goes on, you know. I mean, it's not always a conscious thing. It's not people trying to do things to you. It's just the ambient environment is such that it's all either overtly or it's in some way Christian. My wife grew up in New York around lots and lots of Jews, and you didn't really have to do anything very special to feel Jewish. I mean, because, you know, your friends were Jews and you're always doing stuff with Jews. That's not the way it is in Ames, Iowa. So there's a much smaller number of Jews. And, you know, if you don't do anything to reinforce your Jewishness, you're just going to become like everybody else. And this sort of will bring us back to really what the concept of Hanukkah is. So the concept, the story involves the rededicating of the temple, sort of taking back the temple, pushing back what was the secular world at that time, the Hellenistic influences, and saying, you know, this is what we are. You know, let's proclaim what we are and stick to it. It's sort of ironic in a sense that Hanukkah has achieved a level of importance that it has in competition with Christmas, but that's really the essence of what Hanukkah is. So we're bombarded with these secular influences. They're Christian now, they're not Hellenistic, and it's up to us to rededicate ourselves to what we really are. So we get together, you know, for 8 nights and we light candles and we remember who we are and what we are, and we eat some latkes and reinforce who we are and what we are. And in a community like Ames, it's even more important to do those things because of these surrounding ambience of something non-Jewish.
Would you be willing to sing a song?
I'll chant something for you, the Shema. So the Shema is, in English, it would be, Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. So this is, and I mean, basically, this is the main thing that says, okay, that, you know, we are a monotheistic religion, and this is our God. So it would be, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuto Leolam Vaed.
Thank you. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, and Susan Franson and I have been co-hosting today's show with the help of KHOI reporter Greta Anderson and engineer Rick Morrison.
We have shared the story of Hanukkah and the history of the Ames Jewish congregation on their 50th anniversary. Members of the Jewish community who have told us the story have been John Pleasance, cantor for the Ames Jewish congregation, Sally Lepan, teacher and former director of the religious school, and Hannah and David Gradwell, early members of the congregation.
Special thanks to Barbara Pleasance and Martin Adelson, president of the Ames Jewish congregation, for his additional help.
We thank the congregation for welcoming us to the party, and Rachel and Gabby Weissman, Cliff Bergman, and Irving Melcher for taking time out from their festivities to talk to us.
Music you heard today on Local Talk has included recordings from the Ames Jewish Congregation Choir, Rock of Ages featuring Jules Brooks, Ocho Candelicas featuring Yasmin Levy, Ma'otzur featuring Dana Kirstein, Hanukkah O Hanukkah featuring Jules Brooks and Y Love, My Hanukkah featuring Y Love and Dana Kirstein, all from the CD Aaron Baron Cohen Presents Songs in the Key of Hanukkah. The theme song for Local Talk is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. To hear this online and all of our past Local Talk editions, please go to khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And find us under the Shows tab. Thank you for listening today, and see you again on the radio.
All right.
I'm going to wash the stuff in the sink. Sound good?
Okay. You know what? Yes, it does.